All right, I would like to call to order this Wednesday, November 8th, 2017 meeting of the Springfield Planning Commission. And we'll begin, if you'll rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, any adjustments to the agenda tonight? Hearing none, we'll move forward. Business from the audience not pertaining to deliberations tonight. I have no requests. We'll move forward. Tonight, we are having the continuation of deliberations on an amendment of the Springfield Development Code accessory dwelling units, journal number 811-17-00057, TYP 4. We conducted a public hearing at our last meeting. We closed the hearing. We left the record open until the 27th, I believe, of October. Tonight we will be deliberating and discussing testimony that was provided, hopefully working through a process to move something forward. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sandy Belson, the Comprehensive Planning Manager, for kind of a brief intro, and we'll get into the nuts and bolts.
Good evening, Commissioners.
Good evening.
So I think the best way to go through this would be to look at the memo, which is attachment one, and review the various items that I have listed here that is in response to direction from the Planning Commission. And then I have a couple other items I have noticed or would like to call your attention to that were not in this memo. So there was one change made to the findings in response to the Fair Housing Council. Then we had a series of different code amendments. And I guess maybe we can just, any questions or concerns about the first three? That are listed there. The third one being the biggest question in terms of the foundation language. You had talked about that previously. You did have one public comment requesting that you consider other options, but I did use the language for manufactured homes that's already in the code to apply to any kind of manufactured home or towable structure that's brought in, so it would be consistent with other sections of your code. The fourth one was starting to get into the siding materials and such, and I think that then opens up a broader question that really can be addressed better in terms of the design requirements, and so I'd like to maybe let us talk about that when you're talking about the design requirements, which is item number 9. That's all right.
Okay.
So number 5 was just a wording change. Number 6 was adding submittal requirements as recommended by Commissioner Cuevula. And then number 7, well, any comments or questions about those two? All right, so number 7, I need to make a correction in what I have written here. So in paragraph 2, I had talked about a reserve strip. So that is an option when you are constructing the alley. So if the developer is constructing the alley that is going to serve more than the development that he or she is building, then they can put a reserve strip on that alley and then therefore require any future people that are taking access off of that alley to pay in order to have that be released. That does not work in the case where you have existing platted alleys. And so that's where my memo is not correct. So in that case, we already have a platted alley, like in the Washburn Historic District. The mechanism to be able to recoup costs would be the reimbursement district. And so our municipal code has a process whereby a developer who may be improving an alley that could benefit more than that individual developer can set up that reimbursement district, and then anybody else who then takes access from the alley that is included in that reimbursement district would pay their share at the time that they would take access. So I needed to point that out, that there is that reimbursement district option as a way to share the cost. But generally, there are city policies about when other off-site improvements are required. If you have concerns about those, that's a broader issue beyond accessory dwelling units. You can make a note of that to the council in your recommendation, but that is, you know, a broader discussion beyond what's before you tonight. Number eight. So there was the question that we look at other options in terms of trying to address potential impacts of parking from residents in the accessory dwelling units on the neighborhood streets. So I've proposed another approach that you could use instead of or in addition to the language that you have already seen before, and that is looking at whether there is on-street parking on both sides of the street, not just abutting the property. And so that way it would address the situation that you had at East Kelly Butte or some other places in town, that you would only allow the on-street parking to meet the parking requirement if there is on-street parking on both sides and or abutting the property. So that language is presented. Depending on what you decide, there may need to be a change to a finding that goes along with that. And then number nine, this is probably where you're going to have the most discussion because there are the most options, most choice. And I didn't get a lot of real clear direction last time. So what I did understand from you is that you wanted to be able to look at a somewhat discretionary option, which I presented as option C, and that would allow you to use some of the language that we already have now, that it be similar to what is on the dwellings in the surrounding neighborhood. You could also, in that same sort of discretionary mode, look at privacy considerations. Option B, I'm kind of working backwards here, but option B is I listed a menu, so to speak, of different standards that you could choose from. You know, the ones that you like, you keep. The ones that you don't like, we get rid of, or we can change them. So that if you did want to have some clear objective standards that allowed for the dwelling unit to not have to match the existing house, this is some standards that you could apply. And then, of course, you could always require that they do match the house, and that would be a clear and objective standard. You could use a combination of these approaches, where if it's attached, you're requiring it to match the house, but if it's detached, it meets a certain standard. You could have a combination that you could either match the house or use the discretionary option of number three, or you could have different combinations. So that's what I'd like to really focus your attention on. And then as two other side notes, in talking with our building official, no matter what, I think we would like to change the roof pitch minimum, both for the accessory dwelling unit and in the definition of the manufactured homes, from 2:12 to 3:12 for both aesthetic and construction purposes. And then one of our planners pointed out that we do have a section in the code 3.2-235 residential manufactured dwellings where we list where manufactured dwellings can be used in the city, and we would need to add accessory dwelling units as an allowable use for a type 2 manufactured dwelling.
Okay. So, and I think you're right. I think primary, are there any questions relating to any of those issues that Sandy covered in 1 through 8 prior to diving into 9?
Well, I guess in terms of 8, if you gave me, yes, this is what you like, or you want one or both of those approaches, that would be helpful. Okay. Since that's a
So let's start there. We can always work backwards. Mm-hmm. But I know parking was a consideration that we were having some conversation around. And we talked about flexibility, but we also talked about some potential concerns about overloading the streets with parked vehicles. And so I think the option you brought forward is parking on both sides of the street as opposed to only on the side of the street that abuts the ADU. Mm-hmm. Is that, what are your thoughts about that?
My thoughts about it were as long as there's, as parking is available and you can get two standard size vehicles through. So that's actually a street width issue. So almost like if you had parking on one side, 28-foot street would probably be just great. And if you had parking on both sides, then a 32-foot street would be great. But when it gets less to the point that, you know, you can't get two vehicles through, that's my main concern.
Well, and I did look at using a dimension. That's where I started, and I talked with some of the transportation planners in our city, and we're also going through a transportation system plan implementation in which they're revising the code to address that. And their response was, we have so many different conditions around the city that in some places we have 28-foot streets where you can have parking only on one side, and then in another street, just like down the road, so to speak, you could have it where there's parking on both sides. And so we could take that approach where you're using a dimension rather than if we're allowing that parking, but I'm just saying that it would be inconsistent in terms of the parking that would be allowed on those dimensioned streets.
Yes. If I'm understanding the writing here correctly, where it says, unless there is on-street parking available directly abutting the property, the abutting street includes parking on both sides of the street, and there are no adopted plans to remove the on-street parking. It's not an either or, right? It's a, you need to have the parking abutting you directly, and you need to have parking on both sides of that street for that street to be eligible, correct?
That's how it's written, but you could choose one part, the other part, or both. It just depends on how you want to.
Thank you.
Other feedback? You know, my general feeling is, Sandy, and I'll just say this 30,000-foot view. I mean, I know it's important that we come down on a decision point on this. I don't know that there is necessarily a right or wrong answer. I think that, you know, the Portland information about ADUs and street parking and, you know, that there just aren't a lot of accessory dwelling units, and it really hasn't impacted them that heavily. I think it's probably, for Springfield, it could be a 5 to 8, 10 plus year issue where this might become a concern. And my thinking is we do our best work now without limiting too much the capability of people to exercise this as an option. That's my general feeling. I'll just tell you that. I think that if we limit it, make it too limiting, we're going to discourage this is an option. And I think we've got a lot of feedback from the public and lots of folks that are very interested in this as an option. And Springfield is very, very forward-thinking here. So my general feeling is I would err on the side of being less restrictive, you know, and give it a little time, you know. See in 2 years, you know, how has this played out? How many ADUs have been developed? Are there issues? I mean, you said that they were going through a traffic or a transportation master planning process as well. I think, you know, if this moves forward, I'm sure they will be thinking in those terms as well as they work through that process. So, I mean, that's just my general feeling overall. I think probably reasonable, but a little less restrictive is better. Yes?
I was going to ask, I mean, I've been everywhere in the city, but I'm wondering, first off, even if we just took the whole of that paragraph that's before 9, how much is that really going to shut down? My guess is reading it, it's not really going to shut down an awful lot. And your contraposition, you know, for those of you that have been back east, okay, let's take Boston as your stereotypical example, where walking down the street can be difficult if somebody parks. You know, there's barely room. And so I think, I don't know that it's a bad idea. Number one, I'm not sure that this really restricts an awful lot. But I think having some sort of a standard that says, well, all right, you might stop one or two places. I don't think it's going to stop much. I think it's reasonable.
So parking on both sides is what you're advocating for? So how many, so that would not, would that eliminate the ability for someone to develop an ADU in a, if there was only parking on one side of the street?
Well, she has the conditions in there that talks about, well, if you don't have this, then you have to provide.
Off street, right.
Right, and depending on the existing dwelling, if it's a two-car garage, and if that garage is set back from the street far enough, then you would have four parking spaces, two in the garage, two in front, and you wouldn't need to add any on-street parking or on-site parking to meet the parking requirement. So you're looking at those situations where the garage is either not set back from the street to allow for the parking in front, or they've converted their garage into something else or don't have a garage. So those are the homes that are going to be looking on street to see if there's any parking available. So I don't, you know, I can't quantify how many that would be. I mean, I haven't done, it's probably possible, but I haven't done it.
Yeah, it's very difficult for me to envision the impact of this, you know. And I think, you know, I think we're being anecdotal here to say, well, this isn't going to impact this very much, or this is going to impact this, because we really don't have any empirical evidence to point either direction. So, you know, again, I mean, I personally would err on the side of being a little more lenient. There's always the type 2 process that it's not non-discretionary, that someone could go through if they, and they could deal with the parking issue if they had a creative way to deal with it. That might get around, you know, if you said on both sides of the street parking, you might have to go through a type 2 and show how you were going to meet the standard on a street that was only parking on one side. Is that correct?
That's true. I mean, that is
more extensive process.
That is another option, where you could set a standard, and then if they don't want to meet that standard, and you have an alternative through a type 2, that is an option.
Okay. How do you guys feel about that? I'm inclined to go with that. Feel okay about that? So as is, what I'm hearing is, as is, parking on both sides, and I think
abutting.
And then, you know, if it's within the non-discretionary type 1, And then if they need to exercise with through the planning process discretion, they go through that process and jump through those hoops and notify and do the things they have to do to bring that to fruition. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, on to 9. Now, you have in the code, and I was reading, type 1 and type 2 manufactured homes listed. Tell me the difference between a type 1 and a type 2 manufactured home. Because type 1, you were 2 and 12, and I know you're proposing 3 and 12 on the roof, and type 2, you were 3 and 12. And I'm not, I just need to be clear on the difference between a type 1 and a type 2 manufactured home.
Isn't it a matter of the year of manufacture?
Well, I think you had there's another term that is called out in the code, and it's, well, I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm asking.
So if you look at attachment 2, and if you look at the bottom footer, attachment 2, page 21 and 22 of 40, or there the document, within the document itself, it's pages 10 and 11. So if you get there, you'll see it.
22 of 40.
Okay. Yes. So on the left-hand side, there is definition of dwelling manufactured. And so that's where you get the year in terms of when it was built, whether it's called a residential trailer, mobile home, or manufactured home. That's based on the federal standard of the manufactured standards by year.
So that's the mobile home versus the manufactured home piece. That doesn't address the type 1, type 2 manufactured.
So then when you look below, the first one is type 1, and it's basically a size difference. So a type 1 is 1,000 square feet or larger, and a minimum roof pitch of 3 and 12.
Okay.
Type 2, it had been where it was a minimum of 500 square feet. We're changing that to allow for them to be accessory dwelling units that go down to less than 500 square feet. So we're just saying that it's less than 1,000 square feet. So if it's more than 1,000, it's a type 1. If it's less than 1,000, it's a type 2. And that doesn't make any difference so much in what you're doing, but it does make a difference in terms of where we allow certain manufactured homes. So,
And what you're proposing, though, is the type 2 here under C, you would say minimum roof pitch of 3 and 12.
That's correct.
Right?
Correct.
That's what you're proposing. So either would be 3 and 12.
Correct.
Okay.
And the,
all right.
The
so
state,
it's a size difference.
Right. And the state law allows us to set that, but we can't require it to be a higher pitch per state law.
Okay. Answers that question. Back to where I was. Okay. Non-reflective siding, roofing materials. So that gets to your point that we're not restricting, we're just saying non-reflective, basically, right? You would change C to minimum roof pitch of 3 and 12.
Correct.
Depth of 3 feet, and this has the entrance requirements, balcony requirements, cannot exceed the height of the dwelling unit, primary dwelling unit. So all of those things I think we're pretty much in agreement with. We had some concerns voiced from the public comment around height, but I think you've dealt with that in this information. all the setback requirements and outdoor storage coverage area screen. And then the option C would be the discretionary. Any questions about? Yes.
There's a couple of things that I would like to touch on looking at the material that we received just before phase one of our hearing on October the 17th, and then integrating that into our most recent report on the subject that we're talking about, manufactured homes and movable structures. There is language regarding skirting requirements and also foundation requirements. And I think another issue that is required in a lot of mobile home and manufactured home parks is a requirement that towing hitches be removed. And so I would like to present it for consideration language that states that towing hitches be removed and or any towing apparatus at the time of setup.
We talked about that, I think, but I don't think that was included or encapsulated in the information you brought back, was it?
No, I didn't include any language like that. I think I was assuming that if it was placed on a foundation that you'd have to remove it, but we can be explicit and include that.
Well, in a lot of cases where they're not required, people oftentimes skirt the hitch and leave it in place. And so it's a question of whether that would be desirable or not.
What are your thoughts, commissioners? Yes.
If you took option C on page 4 of 5, I'll be honest, I kind of like that one just because I think that different ADUs are going to fit in different neighborhoods, and if you simply kind of, and I don't know if this legally holds water, and so Greg and some of you smarter guys can tell, but just say, well, the thing kind of needs to substantially look like the neighborhood. I think that's, you know, if that's something that sort of holds water legally, I think it's a good standard, because something that's going to go in my neighborhood may not work in Greg's neighborhood or something, and neighbors get concerned, again, about setting up something which looks like they wish somebody had hauled it away.
Well, we're talking about two different issues here. Option C is actually a type 2 land use process, all right? So that's a discretionary process that you, someone who brought forward a type 2 process would need to notify neighbors within an area and jump through some hoops to be able to do something other than the prescriptive things that are described above, which are non-discretionary.
Under option B.
That's right. So I guess what we're trying to get to is the discretionary or the non-discretionary piece, would we require them to remove the tongue of a trailer, right? And to me, that makes sense. I think you could probably get around that with just the language in about the foundation or your point of view. I think what we're grappling with here is these units not looking like something that's been towed into the backyard and dropped off with the blocks underneath it, right? I think that is not the vision that we have for accessory dwelling units within the city. So I would concur with that. I think that's a good point. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Thank you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. I see him nodding back there.
Well, we do have our building official and planning supervisor in the audience if you'd like to address any questions to them, or if they have any comments, I will hope that they'll get your attention.
I'm sure they will. Okay, so any other issues under 9 as far as you know, these are things that you brought forward that are were to answer some of the questions that we had. And I think we're on board with this, with the exception of those items that we've enumerated. Do you need any other direction on item number 9?
Correct.
Yes.
There's one other item that I would like to touch on, and this is getting back to the issue of windows that we've already discussed at length, and I think the direction that we've been going in is in less restriction on window design, window size, window styles, and so on. They're in the original material, and also in G, there's reference made to potential language stating that second-story windows facing the nearest side or rear yard shall be opaque, and also that windows shall be 5 feet or more above floor elevation. And I think, considering the direction we've been going, that we could remove that language as well. And the reason is that I feel, and I think the presumption would be, that a resident of an ADU should have the same options as any other homeowner, in that for the sake of privacy and security, they can simply install curtains or drapes.
How did we end up with that window requirement? Do you recall, Sandy?
So what I was trying to do, because we weren't as concerned about aesthetics. It seemed like we were moving away from aesthetics. And so I was trying to think about what type of standards would we want to have. And my experience has been that when you're building in an infill situation where you've got your existing single family neighborhood and then you're adding another structure, that the opposition comes from the neighbors that are now sometimes feeling like they've lost their backyard privacy. If you've got a second, especially if you're building a two-story building that's now got residents that can peek over into their yard. It can even happen with one story, but that's less frequent because you can have fences. So I don't know that this came from you, but I was trying to come up with, all given what I know, what we could use as design standards to present them as options for you for your consideration. And that one really addresses, like I said, privacy more than it does aesthetics.
And it's really in dealing with the neighbor,
right,
rather than
the
accessory dwelling unit and the primary dwelling. It's dealing with the neighbors if it's mm-hmm. adjacent or to the rear. So the setbacks, I went through all of the setback requirements, and it's that makes sense. This would mostly apply in a situation where you were building a second-story accessory dwelling unit, potentially. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, most, you said, yeah, it could apply on a single-story accessory dwelling unit. However,
well,
that might be mitigated by, but then would that push that to a type 2 if there was an offense, you know, and they were...
Well, the way I've written the standard up, it's only for a second story window. It wouldn't apply to a first story. If you wanted it to apply to first story, I mean, I was kind of trying to find that balance, as Commissioner Vost is saying. We don't have any of those standards for regular single family homes.
Yeah.
You can add an addition on, and we wouldn't be applying any of those standards to an addition. So where are we making the distinction? And so I was trying to find a balance between not upsetting the neighbors because now there's a new dwelling unit, but yet respecting the rights. Well, what's really the difference between an addition and another dwelling?
Yeah, and I think to your point, personally, I think if you were not restrictive, if we were just building a family room on the second story of an existing primary dwelling unit, and you would not apply this same requirement to that, I personally think this is too restrictive for ADUs, and I think we ought to be fall on a little less restrictive side again.
In the same item H about the balcony, I think is also talking about a privacy issue too.
Correct.
And I found that quite a bit restrictive too, that you wouldn't allow balcony, second-story balcony, unless it faced a garage, street, or an alley. But to me, second-story living calls for a balcony.
Yeah.
Or a deck.
Yes.
Well, the thought is that if you're looking at a two-story ADU, then you presumably have a two-story primary dwelling as a compatible part of the property. So if you don't have an issue with a second-story primary dwelling, then there shouldn't be any additional issues with a second-story, two-story ADU. The only difference would be in the setback and the location on the overall tract of land. So if you're in a neighborhood with two-story dwellings, then that's an issue regardless. And besides that, in eliminating the language, it doesn't preclude anyone from installing opaque windows. It just means that they're not required.
Yes. So a question for you. I'm just trying to understand the setback requirement for the ADU, the property line. Is that any different than the setback requirement between the primary dwelling or an extension of the primary dwelling to the property line?
No, with one exception. So, and that one exception I listed in code amendments number one on page one in there. So that if you have an alley that, because we allow garages to be 5 feet from that property line, so suppose your alley's on the rear. Normally the rear yard setback is 10 feet, but our code allows a garage to be 5 feet from the alley. And so I've proposed in here, and this is not something you talked about because it came up as I was thinking about all these alley access options, that we would allow the ADU to also be only 5 feet from that alley line rather than having to be 10 feet. But other than that, all of the setbacks would be the same.
So only if it is a setback from an alley, it
correct.
Would be 5 feet.
So that leads me to ask, it says balconies on the second floor or higher are not permitted within 10 feet of a property line. So if the setback's already required to be 10 feet, is that the base of the balcony or the extension of the balcony that you're measuring from? Because I would be inclined to think that you couldn't have a balcony that close to the property line anyway.
I'll have to look to our experts behind me, but I think that you can allow some projections into that setback area.
Understood. Here.
2 feet into
right.
any 5 foot or larger setback.
Right.
Thank you. Okay. So what I'm hearing is general consensus that G and H of 9 should be struck. Is that what I'm understanding?
That was my point, no, but that's
I agree. I think that's a really good. I think you brought up some excellent points there, and I think that that makes sense. So, you know, certainly the city council ultimately are going to be hold their own hearings and address this. But I think from a planning commission standpoint, I think we feel comfortable forwarding that recommendation forward. Okay. And I like the option C as well. I like that we've included that option. So. Yes.
So I noticed, and I want to make sure I understand the intention. The option A, option B, and option C are before us to pick a combination of those if we so choose. So a thought I had was that if it's an attached dwelling, they should have option A or C. And if it's a detached dwelling, then they should have all three options. But I don't think option B should apply for an attached dwelling, because I think an attached dwelling should look like the primary dwelling is. I don't know if that's already written in there and I read over it, but I think that's a good way to go.
Okay, so you're suggesting that option A and C would apply only to
attached
and option B and
All three options for
all
detached.
All three options for detached.
So you could do any of them for detached. For attached, you don't have option B.
I'm trying to keep track. Sorry if I can interrupt. I'm trying to keep track so that we can put together a motion that wraps all this in at some point this evening, if you'd like. Option B includes that list that you were just going through.
That's correct.
So I'm a little bit confused as to option. Just clarify a little bit more what, when you get to consensus, clarify really clearly, I think, what standards you want to apply to each, and I can keep track of those.
Okay, just to offer a little bit of clarification, I don't know if you have the packet with you, but in the packet, option A under part 9 is the ADU to match the primary dwelling. So I'm saying that an attached dwelling should be required to match the primary dwelling, period, unless you do a type 2. And then if you have a detached dwelling, you could go for option A, which once again is ADU to match the primary dwelling, or now you have option B, which is ADU to meet clear and objective design standards, which is separate from matching dwelling. And then option C for type 2 should also be available.
So. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Good thinking. Good thinking. I like that.
However, under option C, I think the comparable to dwellings in the neighborhood, I'm concerned that that should be, I'm thinking that should more be part of option B, than option C would be the, if it does not meet the clear and objective standards or does not meet the comparable dwellings in the neighborhood standard.
I think, the intention, the reason the neighborhood can't be in B is because the neighborhood can't be objective, whether it's comparable to the neighborhood, and I think we want it to be as objective as humanly possible.
That's right, where B is the clear and objective standard test, so we can't include that language in B because it's not clear and objective, right?
But under option C, are we requiring the ADU to be comparable to dwellings in the neighborhood?
So I don't feel similar to the materials predominantly used in residential dwellings or surrounding neighborhood versus
that's true.
And if they're going to go through a type 2 process.
Well, do you want to just say compatible then? Compatible to residential dwellings in the surrounding neighborhood instead of materials predominantly used?
I'm not sure that that's that different, is it?
I'm concerned that if we don't have some standard in option C at all, we just say option C type 2, what are our staff looking for? I think we need to provide some sort of metric for staff to know why they would approve, or commission why they approve on the topic. If we just say type 2 in general, then what is their criteria for approval?
Yeah, I think there are two pieces to this. You know, the siding and roofing materials shall be similar to materials predominantly used. You know, you showed us some examples of some ADUs that were pretty cutting edge that really were not exactly like the stuff that was there, but really lifted the I thought they added to the environment.
Well, I guess I'm wondering if there are, I mean, when you look at what you have in option B, there's nothing here other than prohibiting the reflective siding and roofing material. That's the only thing that you are restricting. So I'm not sure that you're gaining a lot by going to option 3 with a discretionary standard if you're looking at the materials, the aesthetics of it. Because I don't know that there's anything in option B that would prohibit something.
I'd be entirely comfortable with striking item A under option C and also the first statement comparable to dwellings in the neighborhood, and then kicking it to our very capable staff of determining whether they think that ADU is acceptable as a type two, looking at whatever design that they'd have. Because I think that by adding A and the initial statement under option C to be comparable to dwellings in the neighborhood, you're really removing an awful lot of discretion from the owner or developer. That's how I'm reading it.
Question?
Yes.
So, question for staff. If, say, we were to take that requirement away and we just said it was a type 2 in general, how would staff approach?
No, you're correct. If we're saying it's a type 2 land use decision, you still need to have criteria.
Right. Okay. So maybe I understand not liking that criteria, but I think we need to settle on some sort of very general criteria or some sort for staff to review based on.
Personally, I like it the way it is.
I'm understanding
that you could do detached, you know, but when you're hooking it onto the house, you don't want it to look like,
well, I think I personally kind of concur. I think that those standards are general enough and there's discretion in that. I don't think it's that limiting to say siding or roofing materials should be similar to. There's a lot of discretion in that. I mean, you go into any neighborhood, there could be tile-style roofing, there could be shingle style roofing, there could be three tab style roofing, there could be architectural shingle roofing, and you know, all you're saying is it needs to kind of fit into the space, and that's the discretionary piece. And I think it's broad enough that you know, we notify, you go through the process and make sure that everybody's okay, that you can move forward with this design and construction to build. So I think it's broad enough, but it does rein it in a little bit. So, and I like the reference to the balconies and windows again, just because it's a nod to that privacy factor, but it's still a discretionary piece. So, you know, there's input to that, and there's it's situational, right? Because it's a type two. That make sense? So I'm okay with it the way it is, I guess, is what I'm saying. Yes?
So on this option C, A, mentioning siding and roofing materials, what about the factor of windows as well as a consideration? Because I know the last conversation we had, I made the suggestion about having some compatibility between the windows on the attached ADU with the primary structure, and it sounded as if that wasn't favored by others.
Well, so, B talks about entrances, windows, and balconies.
But not so much, but this is talking about materials
located, yeah,
rather than location, right. In other words, we're looking at A as siding and roofing materials shall be similar. So is there any question about whether the windows should be similar as well?
Are you talking about option A?
I'm talking about
option C.
Sorry, okay.
Option C,
part A.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
If you want similarity, wouldn't windows be part of the consideration as well? Along the siding and roofing.
I think you could. I don't know that it would be overly restrictive to.
So I mean, similar is a very loose, unrestrictive term. So you've got latitude in that.
Yeah, and option A is, it's very clear that it matches
the house.
The roof pitch and the windows match and blah, 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 blah.
But,
so, you know, to say siding, roofing, and windows shall be similar to.
Well, that's one of the elements that you consider in looking at compatibility.
I think that's probably reasonable as well.
Agreed.
Because there's discretion there, right?
So if you're talking about materials, I'm wondering if you want to make, because I don't know that the materials of the window itself vary that much, whether, I mean, they could be opaque or transparent or whatever, but it's really the trim, I think, that you're talking about.
Well, the issue that we talked about before was window sizes, because of the fact that if you had a large primary dwelling with small windows, and then you're looking at large windows on an ADU, that becomes an issue of compatibility. So then the question would be, do we want that to be approved or something that we should address in some way?
Similar window dimensions.
Similar.
On option C.
Compatibility, I mean, again, that's a loose term.
Well, I would leave it loose. I just like siding, roofing, materials, and windows. I think that's broad. I think that windows are windows and window trim and the look and kind of the... Right. And remember, this is a discretionary process, so so I think broader is better. Especially in option C. You know, frame it, but leave it loose enough because they're going to have to go through a type 2 process. So, but I would include windows in A. I think that's a really good point.
Can I interrupt and ask a clarifying question of the commission?
You bet.
So that would be, so you would change it to siding and roofing materials and windows shall be similar?
Yes.
And you would keep?
Siding, comma, roofing materials, and windows.
Okay. And then you would keep the similar to the materials predominantly used on residential dwellings, or would you change that to shall be compatible with residential dwellings in the surrounding neighborhood?
Well, you could just say similar to the primary residential dwelling.
I think that you...
I think we're talking about the surrounding neighborhood. It's broader than that. A is the non-discretionary connected. This is C would apply to either a connected or not.
Well, I think what I'm hearing the question to be, are you wanting the windows to be comparable to the primary dwelling or to the neighborhood?
Neighborhood,
it's looser.
And I'm actually wondering on whether you want to keep language shall be similar to what's predominantly used in the neighborhood, or do you want to use the word compatible? Because I think that there are different scopes of each of those terms, and it sounded like you had said you wanted to keep similar to the materials or the design predominantly used in the neighborhood, but then your conversation is talking a lot about compatibility. And so I just want to make sure.
Compatible is broader.
That's
Jim.
Friendly insight from the implementation of the code. If we're trying to get at doors, windows, and balconies, I would suggest you consider perhaps the use of the word designed and located with consideration of the privacy of residential neighbors, because isn't that really your concern? I would stay with commissioner's direction on keeping A just the way it is, because they both allow us then to have someone come in with photographs of the neighborhood and say, here's a similar window, or the roof pitch, or the materials are the same as two or three other houses on the same block. And that gives us some sort of empirical data to use in that decision-making process, so we're not just inventing findings. So I like A exactly the way it is, and then B is where I think we could get to the concern of maybe you don't want a full wall to be a window on an ADU in a backyard adjacent to the neighbors. So I would just go with entrances, windows, and balconies shall be designed and located with consideration of the privacy. Friendly suggestion to throw out there for your consideration.
Can I get you to come to the mic next time?
Okay, yes.
Could we also consider maybe either coming up with a different word, just deleting predominantly, because when you mentioned tile roof, for example?
Yes.
So if you're in the neighborhood and there's one house that has a tile roof, you could not argue the tile roofs are predominant.
Yeah.
So if there's no problem with the second house having a tile roof, then you can just drop that and just set
so similar to materials used on residential dwellings.
I like it. I'm involved with the tile roof.
You have that, Christina?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes.
So, with the Part B, mentioning windows for the sake of privacy, are all of our concerns addressed for weird-looking windows? Does privacy cover all of our concerns for those? There was originally that concern of windows that were really, really, really long and narrow that looked like they would on a mobile home. I'm personally in favor of being less restrictive on windows, but I just want to make sure we're covering all our bases and that privacy does cover all our bases.
Well, what I heard Jim say was you would not be in favor of including windows in A. Is that what I heard you say? But leave it the same?
I'm sorry, I was asked by staff to come up too and speak into the microphone, so we have it for the record in the minutes too. I guess it was not a matter of personal preference on A, but I thought A met the intent of the discussion when Chair said, you know, we like it the way it is, with, of course, the Mr. Mott and Council's recommendation on the use of the word predominantly. So I thought in listening to your concerns, they were met by that slightly modified use of A. And at B, not being aware of some of the aesthetic as to the shape of the window and everything, and I would concur with the commissioner that I don't think it's a matter of aesthetics here with regard to that. I just think that designed and located with consideration of the privacy of residential neighbors could get at the sizes, could get at the materials, could get at staff possibly requiring some opacity in the windows. So I thought that got at what the neighborhood concern that you were citing as the primary issue.
So I'm hearing you say, Jim, that is broad enough there that it could give you latitude to be able to apply that in a way.
It's a double-edged sword. There's a healthy amount of discretion in that, and it allows for a lot of different proposals. Staff's well-versed in building a logic train and making findings and conclusions based on this level of direction, should council then implement your recommendation.
So what I'm hearing is A stands removing the word predominantly, and B stands with the revision that Jim had indicated, saying considering privacy, or he truncated that a little bit. Go ahead.
My point was that considerations for design and consideration for privacy are two different things.
They are.
And that's why I brought that up.
They are, but what I heard Jim Donovan say was that they would have the latitude within the privacy considerations, because we listed windows there for window size, window opacity, and you know, some of those elements as well.
We're just talking about C at this point.
I'm talking just about C.
Yeah. Thank you.
If I can interject, if the commission does not care about aesthetics, then I think legally on appeal that Jim would be correct. There are, I think, some gaps that you might want to consider. A proposal for an extremely small window would meet the criteria to consider neighbors' privacy, but may not be desirable from an aesthetic standpoint. And then there was also the concern regarding odd shapes of windows that may not be directly related to a privacy issue.
That's the point I was making.
Okay. So, yes.
So, what I was asking was whether it covered our concerns, and I didn't feel that it covered Commissioner Bowe's concerns. And along with that, I think, for instance, you take a potential ADU that's street facing, and you make the entire front glass. I know it sounds a bit silly, but we did see one in the examples that. We saw a couple weeks ago where it had this garage door and it was mostly glass. And if that glass wall was street facing, that would meet the privacy of residential neighbors requirement, I think. But it would be very, very much of an eyesore potentially for other people that didn't feel that fit in their community. So I think there is a concern. If we're concerned with siding and roofing materials looking like the other houses, then we should be concerned about people putting triangle windows in the front of their house. Just
so casually. I'm hearing consensus moving toward, I'm hearing some disagreement with, what I heard legal counsel say was, if we are concerned about the size and aesthetics of the windows, we should include them in A. And I am open to that. I don't have any problem with that. Yes?
My name is David Bowlesby. I'm City of Springfield Building Official. And this has not come to my attention until you just started talking about the windows and creating a obscuring or opaque windows. So while we can come to a requirement or a restriction within this document, the building codes, which are going to apply to this, say that there's a requirement for natural light in habitable spaces, and you can't have anything less unobscured than 8% of the floor area of the habitable space. And so this is why you see beyond privacy is opaque or some kind of a light limiting or view shield on windows that you see in bathrooms, for example, but you don't see it anywhere else. And so limiting the size of the windows can run into a little bit of a problem with the building code requirements for the windows. The shape's not an issue, it's just the total area that's for the natural light requirement in the building codes. And that's not just in the current residential structural code, but it's also language that's being adopted into the small house code that's building codes division's coming out with. So it'll be in both places.
Okay. Excellent. I don't think we were talking necessarily about limiting the size of the windows, especially under option C, but rather that there's some consideration given for similar materials of residential dwelling units in the surrounding neighborhood. So I think inclusion of that windows in that A is fine.
I'd like to thank you for your presentation there on the windows, and also point out that fire code requires certain types of windows, particularly in bedrooms.
Yeah, so
an ADU is going to have a bedroom, and that's going to have a requirement to have a window of a certain size for emergency exit.
True. Yes?
If I could add one more thing. You're correct about the egress window requirements, and where people are going to want to add an ADU to an existing structure, that structure predominantly built under a previous code that may not have the same requirements, and the requirement for the size of the window required for emergency egress from a bedroom may be a window larger than any of the windows in the existing structure. And so a little bit of a dimensions issue right there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes?
So I have a proposal.
Okay.
For A, that it read siding and roofing materials and windows shall be similar to those used on residential dwellings in the surrounding neighborhood.
I like siding, comma, roofing materials and windows. That's what I think it reads better that way.
And leaving out the predominant.
Well, and the reference to materials again, so it just says, shall be similar to those used on residential.
Dwellings in the surrounding area. Okay.
I would recommend keeping the extra "and designed with consideration of privacy in residential neighbors" under Part B as proposed by Jim. I think that gives you additional opacity, the ability to make other compromises under that discretionary criteria to account for privacy other than the physical location.
Yep, I agree with that.
Sure.
Yes.
So what was mentioned about window sizes and fire code and older houses brought to my attention that not in option C but in option A, where you match the primary dwelling, that creates an issue with D. Windows shall match those of the primary dwelling in terms of proportion and orientation. I don't know if that creates a big problem, but if it's the case that that can't be done for the fire egress issue, that would force this person into a option C type 2. So,
well, I think you could add to D, or in alignment with current building codes, in alignment with current building codes, right? So then what you're doing is you're saying, you know, got to try to match, but if there's a code that says this is in a dwelling unit, you have to be able to get out the window and it has to be a certain size or type, then the building code would overwrite this, right?
Correct.
Could you perhaps add in the description to an accessory dwelling unit that it shall meet current building codes as part of the definition?
You don't really need to do that.
That's a given. Yes, they have to.
They have to.
And keep you from having to mention it every time you need a dimension otherwise.
Yeah. I'm not worried about so much the person not knowing that they need to match it so much as I'm worried about A still being an option for somebody that's in that situation.
Well, I think it would. This is a non-discretionary. A is a non-discretionary process, right? And if we put that in there and we said, you know, then that would still be a non-discretionary process, because when they came in with their plans, the inspector is going to say, well, you want this type of window here to match existing dwelling unit, but in this particular instance, it's got to be this size to meet this requirement.
I'm in agreement with the language you proposed,
right,
a minute ago.
Okay. Did you catch that, Christina?
Where would you add that language? Would you add it
in
to
D?
In just to Z?
In A, option A, D, where it talks about windows shall match those of the primary dwelling unit in terms of proportion, height, width, ratio, and orientation, and then say something in terms of and meet, you know, current building code for egress, or would that be, or would you be even vaguer than that? Just say
consistent with current building code.
Consistent with current building code.
I would just propose that, because there could theoretically be finished materials or eave conditions, there could be other conditions in the current dwelling that are not consistent with the current building code. Okay. I would suggest that we just put in some kind of language that says except as required to meet the current building or fire code, attached accessory dwelling units must meet the following standards under this type 1 procedure. And then you list them all out, and then that would be a catch-all that would cover any proposed building code change, which could be siting related or...
We're talking about a lead-in to pair it to option A and B.
Yeah, you'll need a text that leads into each of these options anyway that defines where they can be used. So if you had that sort of catch-all for the building code up front, then that would, I think there's already that code language and authority, but that would make it really clear, and it wouldn't limit it to just windows if you wanted to take that direction.
Okay, does that tie our hands in getting something prepared for tonight to forward on?
I think that you can make a recommendation to council to, I think you'll be able to move to make a recommendation to council to approve the code amendments as included in the exhibit, and then list out subject to the additional revisions, and then staff can incorporate those revisions in the form that goes to council.
Does that make sense to staff?
Okay. I think we'll formalize those. You can make the motion verbally tonight, and then we'll formalize them in writing before you sign your order.
So you understand what Christina is saying is they will make reference to the code where it needs to be referenced, so that those elements like the window sizing in case of egress or those types of things will tie together with this. Right? That makes sense?
Yeah. It
does to me.
Yes.
It sounds like the direction. Okay. Good discussion tonight, you guys. We're making some progress here. Staff, by the way, Sandy, you have done an amazing job with this process. Amazing. You and your support have done an incredible, incredible job. You know, you came prepared. You've outreached to the community. We had good feedback at the hearing. You know, I just, the process has been a good process. So thank you for the work, the hard work that you guys have done behind the scenes to bring this together. I know it's been huge. So.
I'll second that.
Yeah.
I mean, meeting after meeting after meeting, and still a couple of steps yet to go, but you see this revision after revision. Definitely you can be commended.
This memo was really, really helpful today, put together extremely well, especially with the options. I feel like that set us up for success.
I would agree. Are there other issues that we have?
I just wanted to say regarding the alley paving in item 7, that was a great explanation from you, and I concur for all the reasons that you mentioned. I concur with your conclusion on alley paving.
Excellent. Good. Okay. So at this time,
do you want to take a 3-minute break and I can draft up the changes?
Let's do that. We'll take, yes.
Indicate amendments as per the record.
We have a
record of all the suggestions that we made in amendments.
I don't think that for a motion that suffices under Robert's Rules of Order, which governs our meetings. I think we need to have a specific direction.
Okay, we will take a break until 7:15.